Psalm 1. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning. Good to see you all again. We are this week, we are starting a mini series on the Book of Psalms. Only 9 weeks on that. And the Psalms, we talk about basically the prayers of God's people on mission. Make sense? The prayers of God's people on mission. And 150 of them, and they sort of start with bookends. You know, that's how you've got, at this end, you've got Psalm 1 and 2 kind of set the whole thing up. And it's saying, well, you want to be on people on mission. You kind of want to know what it is and where the road's going and where you get your directions from. Yeah, so with first bookend. And so Psalm 1, it's sort of saying, hey, that the starting point and the wisdom is that the mission starts with the one who sets the mission, with the Word of God. So wisdom says, start there. And then Psalm 2 also says, look, if that's the way of wisdom, you want to know where security comes from. And so security comes in seeking the kingdom and the one with the power and authority. See, bookends, 1 and 2. Hearing the word and being secure and seeking the kingdom. And then you get to the other end. It's good to know where you're going. And it's actually quite good to know where the end is. Because life can be challenging, right? And it gets up and down, and there's all sorts of emotions, and that's going to come out as we go through the Psalms. But the other bookend, Psalms 146 to 150, they basically declare and remind us what the final thing is. It's all of creation singing praise to this wonderful Creator who is love, who is redeeming and restoring. And it ends with the whole creation of God in worship, celebrating who God is and what God has done. So this is sort of how it starts, two bookends. In between, life happens. And Psalm 1 and 2, where are we going to start today? Psalm 1 and 2 also sort of starts with some mini bookends. So in Psalm 1, the very first line, blessed is the person who walks not in the counsel of the wicked. And what goes on, well, right there. So it starts, you know what, the flourishing life? The flourishing life is for the person who listens to God. And then Psalm 2, which is the end, yeah, this is bookend here, and that's the first line of the bookend. Then there's a bookend at the end of Psalm 2, and it finishes it, and it says, blessed are those who make God their source of security. See how that works? That's sort of the structure. The prayers of God's people on mission, the Psalms. We're going to see every emotion you could possibly be going through is going to be captured in this. I'm going to start off, so Psalm 1 says, look, if you're the people of God on mission, you need to be really clear for a start. Say, look, there's actually two ways that you can go. And you might have recognized Jesus picks up on this. Blowing the plot, aren't we? But Jesus picks up on it. And he says, look, there's actually two ways you can go about mission. And he says, look, there's this narrow path down here, but there's actually another path as well. It's a lot wider. But danger. It's not going to lead to life. There is this path over here that leads to flourishing and life, and there's this wide path which a lot of people are going to take, and it's going to lead to the opposite of that. Let's use the word perishing. Not good. And straight up front, so if you want to be God's people on mission and knowing when you're praying God's mission, it's a good starting point, yeah? Wisdom. And so you start off, and I want to say, well, look, pathway one, this narrow path there, this is the one. It leads to life. He gives this beautiful picture, doesn't he? It's like this picture, this person. It's like a tree planted by streams of water. I love in the Manawatu here. First thing we came initially sort of looking at spring when we came and doing some visits. And the beautiful flourishing trees. And then we came in and there's these incredible fruit trees. And man, the gifts of apples and feijoa and this beautiful stuff. And just seeing the beauty of the trees, even in autumn. But it's this picture of this life that is like this tree. And really you could say this tree by the water that's bearing its fruit in season and whose leaves don't wither. It's actually of a life actually becoming all that it was created to be. It's this tree is actually reaching its true and full end. A little acorn gets planted in the ground, and the end is this beautiful flourishing. So that's where it's going. That's what life looks like. And the goal is to actually be all that God wants us to be, to have life and flourishing. And kind of it's like this, it's almost like the first travel blog, isn't it? This psalm is saying, well, here's this path and there's a destination here and you want to know what it's like, maybe the first lonely planet. And you're saying, well, okay, well, if this is this incredible destination as life in its fullness, well, okay, I want to be on this path. Well, how would I walk on that path? How would I actually get there? And so like a good wise starting point, we're going to go and it says, well, here's how you walk on that path and here's how you actually know flourishing and life in its fullness. And it says, this person who's wise and takes this narrow path, this person delights in the law of the Lord. I know some of you are thinking, oh, here we go. Here's the sermon. How's your quiet time? You know, have you spent your time? And you know what? That's a good wise sermon. But I want to just sit there and know that for some, that could bring a little bit of trauma or that reminder of beatdowns you had about that. But I want to focus on this different word that's in there. It's saying those who delight in the law of the Lord. I wonder what you delight in. What do you delight in? I delight in really well-smoked brisket. It's awesome. So good, just done well. There's this craft to it, and man, it tastes so good. Delightful. Something you can do over a number of hours. 10 hours, slow and slow. Steady, persevering. And Kara, I would say, you know, without giving away too many secrets, I'd say she delights in chocolate. You know, good chocolate. She's a great dessert maker. She really is. And man, when she can make a pie. She can make a dessert pie, an apple pie, chocolate silk pie, pumpkin pie, you know, those things. And there's this beautiful craft to it, and it brings people around a table. And so you're sitting there with this love that's poured into this dessert, eating tasty food, and you sit there. You can delight in something like that, can't you? Yeah. Another thing I love to delight in, my body's kind of stuffed. I can't really play sport anymore. It's just old. You think 30's bad, mate? It's like, come on. But somebody are now laughing at me. But it's like, but one of the things, I'm going to get into gardening because I can do that. My body can handle that. And I started something I had to do with the boys. And Delilah got given some bulbs, some tubers of dahlias. And man, I planted those. I don't know what I'm doing, but you learn by starting and you're going it right. And man, last summer, I planted these bulbs. And man, they were old. What are they called? Oh, the vintage ones. There's a really fancy word for it. Heirloom, that was the word, Jody. Good job. These heirloom tubers. And man, I was just like, they came up and they're these beautiful red globe dahlias. Just stunning. And they just didn't stop coming. And I got to pick flowers for my wife, dahlia. That's a good thing, right? So she's delighting on getting this gift of flowers. I'm delighting in the fact that something came out of my labor and I could see it. I delighted in that. And isn't that thinking? You delight in things that you think are beautiful. Things that you think are true and good. Delighting in things that you think sort of bring life. And when this psalmist is saying, blessed this one who walks on this path and wants to know true flourishing, saying actually it's one that delights in what God says. And when I think about that, some of us might have those negative feelings with a sermon like this, but I want you to think about it. It comes back again to what we think God is like and who God is, doesn't it? I want to take us back to last week when we think about the Trinity, this eternal love between the Father and the Son through the Spirit that's others-focused, that is life-giving, that just cannot be held in, that just bursts forth. And if we have a right image and understanding that God is love and loves you and desires for you to have life, and if we think about a God whose word speaks and through the Spirit brings this beauty and flourishing, then actually wouldn't that make sense? We might delight in that if we had that right starting point. And so the psalmist is saying, as we start out this very first prayer of God's people in mission, so if you want to walk on that narrow path and that road that leads to flourishing, delight in the words and the instructions that God gives, because God's good. Yeah? So not only that, moves on and says, this person meditates on it day and night. Not just this quick little short thing like I've done that, but it's this idea that God and God's desires and vision for flourishing here on earth is something I really want to think about, what that looks like when I go into my workplace, when I am in my home, and when I look at Palmerston North and the wider area, I'm thinking, boy, what would it look like for God's kingdom to come? What is God's vision for this place? I want to meditate on God's desire for that day and night. It's interesting, as a lot of people think meditation, this is some idea I've got to sort of still, and in some practices you'd empty out. This is the opposite of that. It's actually a meditation that I actually want to be filled with this great vision and this great love, and I want to think about that and be filled up. An image, it's almost like a cow chewing on something, you know, it's got something to think about. It could be a little verse or an idea, and I'm just going to sit and I'm going to chew on that. If that's not a good image, a piece of candy or something that lasts for a while that you can chew on. I was sort of thinking about it. It's the opposite of dumb scrolling, isn't it? Let's actually meditate on something good and to sit on something of substance that I want to think on. It's the opposite of just sitting at the end of the night when I'm tired, my thumb just accidentally keeps on going up and I'm being bombarded with a bunch of stuff that that's an unconsidered life. Yet I'm bombarded with it, and man, I do it sometimes more than I'd like. But this is a considered life, to think about what is this mission that God calls me on for me to have life. Meditate on that and chew deeply on it. And then it comes up, but there's this other path, isn't there? And I've sort of just given a visual on this side. And I think if this was a psalm, what if we were to think about who was going to sing this psalm, I think it would be a public service announcement. I reckon they'd roll out Susie Cato or someone like that. It would be coming from someone authoritative and wise that would speak to young people. And I think, you know, if the psalm was a colour, you know, I might think about it. I sort of think about yellow and black. This is warning sort of thing that's standing there. And it's saying, hey, look, there is another way. Like, if there's this way of life and we're on this mission as God's people, there is another way. And just saying, be really, really careful. It's a way that actually rejects God and God's purposes and God's ways. And he's saying that way, look, it might seem good and it might seem wide and there might be everyone else seems to be traveling on it. He's saying, actually, if you follow that through, it's actually going to lead to like destruction or perishing, broken relationships, broken experience of self, broken injustice, inequality, insecurity, fractured relationships, things we would look out and we would probably be able to affirm and say our world is experiencing some of this reality, yeah? I don't think we have to look too hard. And he's saying this is the way that leads to perishing, so be really careful. When I look at this path, I think it's really interesting because I shared it a number of weeks ago that I walked away from the Lord and I started walking down that wide path. It was sort of when I left home and hit university. And I didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to actually swing off this path and I'm going to take a wide path that leads to destruction and I'm going to really screw my life up and I'm going to hurt others in the process and I'm going to experience. I didn't wake up one morning with that revelation and decide I'm going to do it. Here's what sort of happens. And the psalmist says that the wise person walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. It's interesting, Psalm 2 picks up this idea, but it's almost like a global scale, and they go to the kings, and they go to leaders and rulers, and those who actually want their own kingdoms that look quite different than God's reign of justice and mercy. And so these powers have got power, and they say, actually, I think that God's law is actually counter to what I want with my money, sex, and power, and with the rule that I have, and with leaders in that way. And so they see God's way as something that's hindering in something they need to actually be, it holds them back and restrains their power and their desires for the world. And so they see it as a shackle that they need to be freed from. And so there's these people out there saying, hey, you know, life is like this. Come and pursue our vision of the world. Money, sex, and power, take your pick. And he's saying, but notice the progression. You don't wake up one morning saying, right, I'm going to come over here to train wreck my life. It starts with a walk. And all of a sudden you're walking with this other way, just a little bit. You're sort of moving. Oh, all of a sudden I'm stopping and I'm standing. And I'm listening a bit more. And so I've gone from this sort of unexamined life. I've been walking. Now I'm standing. And this person, I'm in full conversation with this other idea. What happens next? Oh, hang on a sec. Now we're sitting down, he says. You're sitting. One might say you are now planting yourself down on this other path. Do you see that progression? So he's saying it's like that. One minute you're walking, not really thinking an examined life. The next minute you're standing, and then you're sitting. And all of a sudden you're planted on this other path where just the river's going that way. And that's sort of the way it works. So as we start this missional life, the psalmist is saying, look, be careful to who you look for wisdom. Because there's a way that leads to life, and there's a way that leads to perishing. Straight up. Easy, eh? You might think, oh, that sounds a little bit judgmental, Chris, or just a little bit narrow. But you know, Jesus does the same thing. I think about, he picks up this idea in the Sermon on the Mount. Most famous sermon you could imagine. And we think about that sermon, there's all these beautiful images that people, our neighbors would know and love to quote, the golden rule, love your neighbor as yourself. Think about the beauty of the God who clothes the lilies and feeds the birds, that turn the other cheek. Beautiful pictures that are there. The Lord's Prayer comes into it. And really Jesus is saying, what is the blessed life? What is this flourishing life? And that's what he starts the sermon with, and he gives this different picture of God's kingdom. But have you ever noticed how Jesus ends his sermon, the famous sermon? The last image, this is the end, right? He's just given all that stuff that we love to dwell on and talk about and sing songs about. And it comes up at the end, and he says, look, the winds came and the floods came up and the house that was built on the sand crashed down. And this is the last words of the Sermon on the Mount before he drops the mic. He says, and great was the fall. That's the end of Jesus' sermon. He's picking up from Psalm 1. That's why I think this is pictured, this public service announcement, this warning that starts, if you're going to be a people on mission, better know your ways. Great was the fall. You picture that, a house is probably the most expensive, the most valuable item you might ever have. You think about, boy, not in the past, but now you think about the fact you don't have a house and you think what it might be, what it's going to mean for you to actually be able to afford one, yeah? You think of the work, the labor that would have to go, the costliness of it. The sacrificed everything into that. And yet this home, you think it's a place that's going to bring security, maybe safety. It's a good place to maybe raise children in. And then this image of your life's work, everything you have invested in and given yourself to. And at the end, great is the fall. Who wants to live a life like that where everything we've given ourselves to and invested in comes to absolutely nothing? Anyone? No one wants to be that person. And Jesus is starting, ending the Sermon on the Mount, he's saying, look, this is the path that leads to life. And he gives the Beatitudes and preaches. But there's another way. He says, oh, don't go down that path. Don't make the mission of your life things that aren't lasting. Don't give yourself to that. Warning. Caution. Stop. Think. Are you walking? Are you standing? Are you sitting? Be thoughtful. And he brings this clear decision at the end. And notice that he picks up, he uses the path, the narrow path. And he talks about the tree bearing good fruit and bad fruit. He's drawing on Psalm 1. He's picking up on it. And he says, and it's as simple as this, saying there are two ways, and one leads to flourishing, the other to perishing. Seeing the wise person, and this is what Jesus says, what is the way on this? What's the wise person? Jesus is that gate that you enter through. And he's saying the wise person is the one who hears his words and obeys. Hearing Jesus' words and obeying them is walking on the narrow path. And it's the way that leads to flourishing in life and to something of substance that'll amount to something good, that'll reach its true end. That's simple. It's as clear as that. I just wanted to think, in landing, think about, well, is this still true today? Let's think about this. Was this just something that was thousands and thousands of years old for the psalm, a couple of thousand years old for Jesus? Is this still practical wisdom for each of you and me today? My wife is smarter than I, and she picked up last year, she said, oh, I've just been noticing. And everywhere I go, on the parenting blogs and the conversations at the school gate and the conversations with other parents and with grandparents in her circles, she said, and the teachers, everyone today seems to be talking about resiliency. Yeah? And they're talking about, with the rise in anxiety and depression, social disconnection, relational struggles, there's this conversation going, maybe you recognize it, how do we create resilience in our young people? How do we raise young people who can weather the storms of a changing world and yet flourish? There are parenting books on it. There are business books, and the local councils are doing work, and government departments spending big dollars on resilience. And Carol, in her smarter wisdom than me, she came back and she said, Chris, I notice in Scripture it doesn't really talk about resilience. But what it does, resilience comes out of being rooted. If we want to raise resilient young people and we want a resilient society, what we actually need is a society that is rooted in something secure that can actually stand and last, be eternal, and will stand up against the storms of life. An identity, a purpose, a mission, something lasting. Resilience comes from rootedness. And as the book of Psalms, the prayer book of God's missional people, opens up, saying, what do you want to be rooted with as you go about this mission? You want to be rooted in the word from the one who is life and love and gives it, and rooted in seeking after this eternal kingdom on earth as in heaven. Resilience comes on being rooted. So there we go. That's pretty simple, isn't it? So here's the question. Is that the foundation of our missional life together? What part does delighting in God's word, recognizing that it comes from one who's love and life, play in it? Is it dumb scrolling, or is it actually intentional thought? And I guess the second part of that, is that what we are establishing for our children and grandchildren, and who they are and who God is? Something that is worth their life and they can stand on. So why don't we respond in that? The tone of the psalm is to meditate. So I think the best response would be to meditate on the path that leads to life or the path that leads to perishing.